Welcome to True Crime in the Low Country, where we explore the darkest corners of the region's criminal history. Join host Frank Santarella and co-hosts Crime and Cask, Jim Cask, and Elaine Greenwood of Superwoke News as they dissect the chilling details of the Murdaugh murder trial, a case that has gripped the nation and exposed years of fraud, deception, and tragedy. It's true crime in the Low Country, and the truth is just around the corner.
And I just got nominated to be the Secretary of Transportation because I travel a lot.
And I support that nomination. What do you think, Frank?
I think I want to put up a nomination for Jim instead, the Secretary of Disinformation. All right.
I'm bucking for ambassador to the UK, but we'll see.
That ain't
happening. Okay, now listen. You guys, let's get going.
All right.
Because I got things to do and people to meet and blah, blah, blah.
All right. John, tell me when you're
That's
ready.
That's not true.
I'm All right, we're up. Ready. Good morning. This is Frank on Target, and this is True Crime in the Low Country with the illustrious Elaine Greenwood and the infamous, if not famous, Jim Cask of Jim Cask Crime and Jim. What's your station now? Crime and
Oh my God.
Crime and Punishment? What?
Crime and Cask.
Oh, Crime and Cask. All right. That's well, hey. But anyway, this is low crime in the
world. Wait, Frank, before we go much further, what would be the opposite of illustrious? Would it be the dull and obtuse? Can you just introduce me that way?
No, the obtuse, the obtuse.
Okay. Dull, but illustrious, that would be the lack of luster.
I'll grab the thesaurus later and we'll work it out.
Okay.
All right. This is True Crime in the Low Country with our comedy team, Jim and Elaine. And they beat the hell out of the rest of the comedians that we have here at the Red Brick. You know, we had comedians here at the Red Brick, and they put people to sleep. It was Johnny No Doze and the Sleepers. All right, but anyway.
Well, comedy's hard though, Frank. Comedy's hard.
Comedy is hard. It is hard. Especially if keeping it clean is hard. You know. Anyway, folks, where did we leave off last time with our last episode?
With Patrick Wilson, with the illustrious Jim Cask and his fabulous, exclusive, he's got a story. He interviewed Patrick Wilson. And
like
this
60
is...
minutes over here.
Who, what?
I said I'm like 60 minutes over here.
Yes, come on.
You're way better than that. You're not Leslie Stahl. I would smack you sideways if you were. Okay, so, no, but, I mean, you're actually accurate, and you did the research, and it's amazing. So take it away, Jim.
Thanks, yeah. So, yeah, if, just to kind of give everybody a little background on this, Patrick Wilson, according to sources, is a person of interest in the now – declared homicide by SLED, the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division, in the death of Stephen Smith from July of 2015. He was killed on Sandy Run Road on the evening of July 7th or July 8th. He was found on July 8th, and it's been unsolved since 2015, going on 25 years here shortly.
It's widely believed to be a hit and run. That's what Dr. Aaron Presnell said. That's what I know Dr. Cyril Weck told me was his impression of having seen the mate report. And then I believe that was actually confirmed by this third autopsy that they made a big splash about doing it and then just kind of quietly ignored whatever came of it. But, and we talked about this last time that murder, that homicide is different than murder. Murder involves intent, where vehicular homicide just means that he died and that this was related to a vehicle. But you have some very specific data about how that occurred, which I think is compelling.
Right. Well, I mean, before we get into that, let's back up the train a little bit and talk about Wilson and Conley, and Sean Conley is the other person who's the other person of interest, according to SLED, according to reports from SLED. So you have two individuals. Why were they involved in the first place? You kind of backed that up a little bit, because they were first mentioned in the MATE report. However, in the MATE report, I do believe, now they were named in the MATE report. In publications, I believe their names were blacked out.
Really no, sure no, no. I've got those. No, no. They were named, and they were named. They were not blacked out. Fitch News published right. several articles naming them specifically. They quoted the MATE report, back when they first started covering. When they first started tying Stephen Smith to Murdoch, which was always a tenuous connection at best, so that was in the month after the murder of Paul and Maggie. So it was there and published. So that's how I did content on Patrick Wilson and Sean Connolly. But you went so much further than anybody else has gone. You actually interviewed Patrick Wilson.
I interviewed Patrick Wilson. I did. And I actually went out after the interview, and I went back to Hampton or this Brunson area. And there are some things that he told me during the interview. Like, for example, Wilson and Conley live about, I don't know, maybe 15, 20 minutes apart, okay? And to get there, it literally is a seven-minute drive from Patrick's house to where he lived to Sean's house. And you would go down this road called Prince Williams Road, and it comes to a T to Sandy Run Road. You take a left on Sandy Run Road, and at the end, you end up at Sean Conley's house. Now, during the interview, Wilson told me they wouldn't have taken that way. They took dirt roads. They took, Joe Miley Road in that particular way. But I went there, and I sat one afternoon. I'm sure everybody who lived down in that area was, who in the hell is this guy keeps driving by? But I drove those routes, and excuse me, there's three routes to go. I went through the back way. I went through the gravel road that he talked about. I had a dog chase my truck. And I went through the Joe Miley way. And I went through the Prince Williams way, where it comes to the T and goes to where? It goes to Sandy Run Road. And I took the last one with Conley's house. Each time I did one of these, I timed it. And here's the thing. It was 22% faster to go on the road, Prince Williams Road, to take the left on Sandy Run and go to Sean's house. Now, I think we talked about this last week. You live where you live, and wherever you go, grocery store, someone's house, whatever it is, you normally know what the fastest way is, and that's the way you go, because who wants to spend an extra 20% in the car when they don't have to? Now, I'm not saying that they've never taken those routes. What I'm telling you is the quickest way to get Sean's house is on the road to go down Sandy Run Road. And if you go down Sandy Run Road, where Stephen was found on the road, kind of off the side of the middle, it would have been, if he got hit, as Dr. Presnell said, with something like a side view mirror, if he would have gotten hit by that, it would have been on the passenger side of the vehicle, which if you're driving a truck off of Prince Williams Road and you take a left, you're technically kind of going a little bit northwest. So the right side of the vehicle is where it would be. And I said last week when I was on that road, most people, because it's a smaller road than normal, and the MATE report is wrong. So most people drive in the middle of that road because the road's just real narrow, and those guys are driving big, oversized trucks with big, oversized tires. A lot of them are driving 2,500, 3,500-type trucks with dualies on the back, and honestly, it's too easy to go off the side of the road, so what do? They kind of go off into the middle.
Now that's important, Jim. Just a minute. Let's back up. Presnell didn't say anything about being hit on the passenger side or the driver's side. That's not what you meant to imply at all.
She didn't say that. No, she did not. She said it.
Okay, but here's the deal. People, that matters. The fact that road is more narrow than an average road, you know, the distance between the center line and the white line on the side of the road is perceived to be a standard distance. And I would like to call Dr. Cyril Webb back, but I'm sure that when he saw the photos of Stephen Smith's body laying in the road, he estimated even how much blood was pouring from the body based on the distance from the center of the road to the white line, which is clear in one of those videos. And you know the photo I'm talking about. In fact, I think you published the photo in Defending Alec Murdoch, you know, not guilty by reasonable doubt. What you have to factor in, this is where you're right, Mate had it wrong because they did not, either they didn't know or they didn't bother to point out that Sandy Run Road there is very narrow, and so the distance between the yellow line, the center of the road, and the white line is much shorter than the expectation, or than I would want to say normally is, which changes a few things, including why you're driving down the middle of the road and why he was hit on the passenger side. So I agree with what you're saying. I just want to make sure the audience moves along with this, because I know that was a source of confusion.
The main report is wrong, because I stood on that road, and what made me measure it was really standing on the side of the road where the white line is, and I took steps to get to the middle. I said, well, how many steps does it take? Because I saw all these trucks driving down the middle of the road. I'm like, you know, I know Sandy's, Stephen's mom, Sandy Smith, and said, why was he in the middle of the road? I'm like, well, what would it take to get into the middle of the road? So I literally stood on the white line, and it took me three steps. Now, I'm 6 foot one. I have longer legs. He was 5'7", so I get that. However, we're not talking about, you know, feet. It would be inches. So let's say he did it, and, you know, he wasn't quite in the middle of the road, but it took me three steps. I literally, one, two, three. And, you know, normal steps, like you would measure something, not like I'm taking these giant steps to try to get there in three. It was just three normal steps. And I was quite surprised at that. So I went and got the tape measure. And I measured it, and it was from the white line closest to the road to the yellow line in the middle. That measurement is eight feet, 6 inches. Now, the lane widths in South Carolina range from anywhere from 9 to 12 feet per lane. 10 to 12 is probably most common. And in the Mate report, they list it as 10 feet.
Wow.
Literally.
Yeah.
In the Mate report, it's listed at exactly 10 feet. It's not 10 feet, I promise you. Now, is it 10 feet maybe somewhere on that road? I don't know, maybe. But at the spot where Stephen Smith, and I just didn't take one measurement, I went and took a couple. They were all within an inch or two of 8'6". So it's not like I was completely off in that one spot. So the Mate report is wrong. And so if somebody, as I mentioned in my article, there's a second article out online now at crimeandcask.com on the interview. I talk about that. Like, why did Stephen, why was he in the middle of the road? So then you have to back up, and there's other things that Wilson told me. And listen, and I'm not saying that Wilson and Conley did this. The state of South Carolina believes they did. But what I'm saying is, let's say, for an example, those two like to hog hunt a lot. And according to Wilson, he told me that he and Conley would hunt out of Conley's truck. In fact, a few weeks before the death of Stephen Smith, Wilson told me in the interview that they were out hog hunting in Wilson's truck, and actually he shot a 9mm high-powered rifle out the window. And when he did that, it kind of missed, or I don't know what happened, but he said he shot the mirror on the side view mirror of Wilson's truck. It's the same side view mirror that Officer Nick Ginn, formerly of the Hamilton County Police Department, wanted a picture of. So he shot out, not the mirror itself, but it was a plastic piece part, he said, that fell off of the truck when he shot it. So these guys, you know, they're not supposed to, but they also, as I said before in the article, if you look up Wilson and you look up especially Conley's record, he has a lot of South Carolina DNR violations, including trespassing, including hunting antlerless deer out of season. And I think there was one there for fishing as well. So you know, they're not accustomed to kind of breaking the laws of South Carolina Department of Natural Resources. So let's just assume for a second, maybe you're talking about Stephen Smith. Why was he in the middle of the road? Okay, his car had was on the side of the road. Gas cap was off. He was walking towards his father's house, which lives over by Sandy Run Road. And why would he be out in the middle of the road? Well, if most cars were coming down the road, they'd have their headlights on, and they would be flying down that road. I think it's 45 miles an hour. Most people didn't do that. They were doing 50 or 60. And you can hear them coming down the road for a mile away, so there's no hiding it. Mm-hmm. It's not like anybody surprised him. But let's say, for an example, a truck was coming down the road, and they were hog hunting at 3 a.m., and it's super pitch black out. But I have talked to many people in the Lowcountry who hog hunt or know people who have hog hunted at night out of a truck. Now, it's not legal, okay? You have to do it on registered property. You can't be doing it from the road, especially where there's houses. But let's just say this is what happened. When you hog hunt at night like that, if you're going to do that, the proper way to do it, if you're going to do it, I guess, is to have your headlights off, because that's going to spook the hogs. And then you're going to go slower, 25, 30 miles an hour. And then you're going to have spotlights. Now, those spotlights typically aren't white lights. You're going to have some sort of, I don't know, red or green kind of plate over the top so that it doesn't spook the hogs, because these are feral hogs. They get spooked easily. So now, if I'm Stephen, and I normally see these trucks coming down 40, 50, 60 miles an hour, zooming by, I'm not going to go out in the middle of the road. But if I see one that's driving slow, that has their headlights off and spotlights on, well, maybe, and I'm just saying maybe they're looking for me. Maybe he doesn't know that they're hog hunting. Maybe he just thinks that they're just, you know, shining lights out trying to find somebody. Or maybe he thought it was the police. I have no idea. But it would only take Stephen Smith at 5'7", about 2.5 steps to get where he ended his final resting spot on that road. So 2.5 steps off of the road, it's not like he was taking 10 steps to get out there, and it was a big deal. It was only 2.5 steps. And think about that. That's not very much. So I think that helps explain a little bit why he would have been out in that road. You got a slow truck moving with the headlights off and there's lights flashing out of it. That's an interesting part. And the other interesting part about it is there's houses. So when you turn left onto Prince Williams Road, there's housing on the right-hand side. There's woods on the left-hand side. But when you get past the houses, all of a sudden, in July of 2015, you encounter cornfields. And cornfields are like candy to feral hogs. They love rooting around in cornfields. It's one of their favorite crops to go into. And in July, think about it. In July in South Carolina, corn is, I mean, we are putting corn out like crazy, right? You go up into the Midwest, and it's knee-high by the 4th of July, but not just.
I was just going to say that the rule of thumb was knee-high by the 4th of July, but South Carolina is warmer, and so the season would be advanced. So, sure, yeah. That makes sense. Yeah.
And the hogs aren't looking for, you know, corn that's completely done. They're just eating anything. I mean, and, you know, they're feral hogs, but mm-hmm. corn is one of their favorites. So once you passed the last house on the right-hand side, because there's no housing on the left-hand side down Sandy Run Road near his body, all of a sudden it's cornfield. It turns into cornfield. And he is probably, I don't know, maybe a couple hundred feet from the house. So this is where you're going to start looking for hogs with your headlights off. And you're not looking down the middle of the road to see where you're driving, because it's pitch black out. You know where you're going. You can hear the road. And you've got, you know, red or green lights out the window, and you're driving 25, 30 miles an hour. It's kind of.
But Jim, they were saying, Patrick, I thought Patrick said they were not looking for hogs that night. In fact, they were busy doing drugs and drinking at his dad's house, but they did go out because they ran out of drugs or something, alcohol
he
or drugs. So they did go out to drive around. So they're out there driving around one way or another, whether they're hog hunting or not.
No, I think that makes a, I think that makes a difference. I think that makes a difference.
I'll
and I'll
them.
Tell you, I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
If they're hog hunting, they're not going to be going 45 miles an hour. All right.
No.
If they're going from one location to the other to pick up drugs, now when the story that was conveyed to you, wasn't it that he was by himself? One of them was by themselves. I think it was and hit something and didn't know that they hit something until the next day.
Let me give you their alibi. What I wrote about in my second article, which is online, and then I'll tell you about the phone call, what you're talking about, because we talked about that last week. So Patrick Wilson gave me he and Sean's alibi for the evening of July 7th and into the morning of July 8th, 2015. And Wilson told me that on Tuesday, July 7th, and well into July 8th, which was Wednesday, that he and Sean were on a bender. He said they were consuming beer. I asked him what kind of beer. He said Bud Light. They were consuming cocaine and marijuana. That was a direct quote from Wilson. He says, the night began at Wilson's dad's house. His name is David Wilson, and David lived not far from where Patrick lived. And Patrick lived with his great-grandmother. Her name was Lucy Altman. She's passed now. He said all three partied Tuesday night at Wilson's dad's house, and Wilson claims, Patrick said, they never left his dad's house until the morning of July 8th, after sunrise. So he says, on the morning of July 8th, after the sun had come up, and he mentioned it as the sun had, after the sun had come up, he says that they ran out of drugs, and so they left to get more for the first time on what was now Wednesday morning. And Smith's body had already been found by law enforcement this time. I think it was 4 o'clock in the morning was the 911 call. And Wilson said that Conley drove his blue Chevy Z71 pickup truck, which has lifted tires to it, and it has aftermarket tow mirrors on it at the time. They drove to go get more drugs. He says, during that drive, they encountered a police license check, is what he told me. And it was conducted by local law enforcement. According to him, it was the Hampton County Police Department. He didn't identify to me where it was, but he said that they were stopped. Wilson identified an officer who spoke to them. His name was Officer Craig Smith, according to Wilson. And he said at the time, Officer Smith was a sergeant for the Hampton County Sheriff's Department, and he was supervisor of the Hampton County Sheriff's Office Road Patrol Division. So that makes sense, right?
Right.
He said Sergeant Smith checked their IDs at the vehicle. So remember, Conley and Wilson were 17 at the time. They were not even adults, and they were certainly underage in the state of South Carolina to have alcohol. But they had been drinking all night long, according to Wilson. So they hadn't gone to sleep, all right? And anybody who's gone out drinking and whatever, who knows if they were smoking? I mean, you're going to look like you've been doing it all night long. But anyway, they get stopped, and they're 17 years old. And he says that Sergeant Smith then jumped in the back of Conley's truck, and there was a cooler back there. And so these are details, right? They're pretty good details. He said the cooler contained a thing of moonshine. So he says that Sergeant Smith took it out of the cooler, and he got down from the truck. Now,
did Craig Smith take the cooler?
He said, no, he didn't take the cooler. He just took the moonshine out. Now, I stopped him. As soon as he said this, I said, hold on a second. I said, did he have probable cause or a warrant to jump onto your vehicle and open a closed cooler? And Wilson looked at me and started laughing. He's like, are you kidding me? I'm like, no, I'm not. He's like, no, he just did whatever he wanted to. I was like, oh, okay. That's, again, according to Wilson. I said, then he broke you up for a ticket, right? He's like, no, he let us go through. I'm like, hold on. I'm like, you're 17 years old. You've been drinking all night long, so you got to smell of beer. You maybe smell of marijuana. Your eyes are going to be bloodshot and darting all around from doing coke. And you have a bottle of moonshine in the back of your truck. You're underage. and a kid, Stephen Smith, was just found killed, and the dude lets you go. He's like, yeah, let us go. I'm like, all right. I'm like, what'd you do on the way back? He goes, we took a different way back. So they went and got more drugs, and they went back to his dad's house. He said they mainly went on dirt roads to avoid the cops, according to him. So that's his alibi. They were doing, with his dad, they were doing drugs and drinking beer. Now, I reached out to his dad via Facebook, David Wilson, and he hasn't responded to me. Asked him to confirm that, but he hasn't responded. But I did ask him. So I asked Wilson. I said, here's the scenario. I said, so this is what you're telling me. I said, but let me give you a different scenario based off of a lot of different reports. I'm like, yeah. I said, I showed him a copy of, I'm like, you're in the New York Post, for crying out loud. I said, what if it's possible that you and Sean, while drunk and high, decided on a whim at 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever time it was to go out hog hunting? I said, you're high on marijuana and coke, and now you've got high-powered rifles out the window of Sean's lifted truck, which you said you've done many times before. And maybe you're going to Sean's house to pick up his rifle because you guys are at your house, or maybe your dad's house. I don't know. But you go through that stop sign because you want to get to the quickest place you can to get to Sean's, get to his gun to go out shooting. Or maybe you're just driving around. Who knows? I said, but in this scenario, could you have accidentally maybe just swerved into or away from, or I don't know what, from Stephen Smith, who may have been trying to flag you down in the early morning hours because you had some spotlights out the window? And his response was, no. We were at my dad's house all night partying. We didn't leave until the sun came up. And then he said, besides, we wouldn't have driven down Sandy Run Road where Stephen was hit. And I stopped him, and because I thought, you know, this was probably halfway through the interview, and I interviewed him for over an hour and a half. I said, you know, it's interesting. You keep saying that Stephen was hit. I said, but according to you, he was beat up with a baseball bat. And I'm going to get into that in a second, but that's what he told me. He told me he was beat up with a baseball bat, and he was killed with a baseball bat. So I said, so Patrick, you keep saying that he was hit, but you're telling me that he was beat up with a baseball bat. So which is it? And at this point, I will tell you, he looked a little confused when I confronted him with that, because he had been saying he was hit all the time. Oh, yes, he was hit. I said, he goes, well, that's just what the news is saying. I'm like, yeah, but that's not what you're saying. You're saying that someone beat him up with a baseball bat. But you keep telling me that he was hit by a vehicle or something. And he just kind of looked at me and kind of shrugged his shoulders, and we kind of went on.
But do you have a feeling that he was lying? So you think he's obviously lying, that he knows that Stephen was hit, not attacked with a baseball bat. In fact, no coroner, no pathologist looking in his body has confirmed this theory that he was attacked with a baseball bat at all. There's no evidence of it. Their evidence is he was hit by a vehicle, and he actually died before he hit the ground. You know, he was killed instantly. Not this theory of anything with the baseball bat. What?
Yeah, I'm gonna tell you who he thinks did it. Okay. But when I tell you
the editors at Netflix, let me guess, does he think the editors at Netflix, because they were pushing that baseball bat theory too?
Yeah, he had. And then before I tell you who he did, I went and did an investigation on what he told me, and I couldn't find any evidence of it. He claims, not through firsthand knowledge, but through people who he heard it from, he claims that Stephen and Buster Murdoch were having an alleged relationship, more than just buddies, okay? And he claims that Stephen was going to out Buster, and because of that, he alleges that Buster, with two other people, he gave me the names of the two people, with two other people, went out looking for Stephen to, as they would say on TikTok, unalive him. I have found no evidence to support that whatsoever. Zero evidence.
But I've heard that. I started hearing that in September of 2021. Exactly
and
that.
Not only me,
especially
but
with the two
me,
other people.
Yeah, and not only me, but the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division also negates. And they say that Murdaugh's, period, don't have anything to do with the death of Stephen Smith. So whoever.
But Jim, wasn't there even embellishment that of these two other people, one of them got a college scholarship or something like that, or benefited financially from. There was a lot. You know,
yeah, one of them
I'm
went to Winthrop.
Okay, but here's the deal with that story. That story I heard from somebody that was directly related to Sandy Smith. So if Patrick will, is Patrick the origin of this story? Who is the origin of the story? Because it's a story that was out there. It's a story that is what Netflix is referencing. In fact, I think it's the basis of a defamation suit with Buster against Netflix and the producers of that Netflix documentary. Netflix apparently just bought the production and another company actually produced it. But that, so, you know, what I'm wondering is, are you suggesting that Patrick Wilson was the originator of this totally false narrative?
No.
So he heard it from somebody else.
Stay with us on True Crime in the Lowcountry. We'll be right back after this short commercial break. Don't go away.